hear me all right without the remote mic? Wilton, is it okay for the sound? Apparently not. Okay. All right, we'll try the sound here and get it going. First of all, I'd like to appreciate your attention this evening. I was making a comment to my son, Tanner, either yesterday or today, regarding the fact that I had the lesson tonight, and I find it a bit of a challenge because I feel obligated in presenting a word of God to not only present the word of God as he intended, but also to make an attempt to assess what I perceive what a need in the congregation is and to present on that topic. And with my skill level, that presents a bit of a challenge at times. And that's what I'm doing tonight, is I'm attempting to cover a subject that I know I need to work on, and I suspect a lot of the brethren here do. And it gets back to the invitation that I gave Wednesday night. In fact, you might want to think about this as just a continuation of the invitation, in that our lives as Christians is composed of a whole series of actions that are based on the choices that we make. And those actions and those choices are hinged upon what our faith is and the strength of our faith. In last Wednesday's invitation, we were coming from James chapter 2, verses 14 through 26, and we discussed the relationship between our faith and works. We discussed the fact that these works or these actions are the accumulations of many smaller decisions and actions. And we discussed the fact, or hinted at the fact, that faith that we have is shown through our works and our actions. I also made reference to Hebrews 11 as an excellent source of examples that showed their faith. And that's what we're going to be doing tonight, is we're going to be reading through and working our way through Hebrews chapter 11 through Hebrews chapter 12 too. And we're going to be reminding ourselves of these examples, because most of these stories are familiar stories for everybody. But we're going to work through these and remind ourselves of these stories and these examples with the goal of strengthening our understanding and the belief in the power of faith in a person's life. The objective of this is to encourage ourselves to put our faith into action in our daily lives. So, to do that, let's go back to James chapter 2, verses 14 through 24 again, and we're going to read that straight through. That's James chapter 2, verses 14 through 22. And I will be reading from the English Standard Version that's on my printout, because I can read that. I can't read the different texts in the Bible for some reason. It's telling me I must be getting a little bit old, and my cataract surgery didn't do what it was supposed to. Either that or my bifocals. But I'll be reading from the English Standard Version. And incidentally, I would encourage you to read through with the translation that you have with you, if you have one with you. James chapter 2, verses 14 through 24. What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to him, "Go in peace, be warmed and filled," without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. But someone will say, "You have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. You believe that God is one, you do well. Even the demons believe and shudder. Do you want to be shown, you foolish person, that faith apart from works is useless? Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up his son Isaac on the altar? You see that by faith that faith was active among his works, along with his works, and faith was completed by his works. And the scripture was fulfilled that says, Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness, and he was called a friend of God. You see that a person is justified by works and not by faith alone. There's some key concepts in this passage that we've just read. The first one is faith without works is dead. And rather another way to look at that is faith is being made complete or perfect by the works. But it's not just any works. It's the works that are done in accordance to God's will. We can come back and state this another way and say that man is justified by faith and works, not faith only. Both are needed. That is, our faith should motivate and direct our actions. What we do ought to be the result of what we believe. With that in mind, let's turn now to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. And that remember tonight as we read through Hebrews 11, 1 through 12, 2, that what we're trying to do is remind ourselves of these examples with the goal of strengthening our understanding of the interaction between faith and works, and the goal of strengthening our belief in the power of faith in a person's life and the actions they take in their lives. We also want to encourage ourselves to put our faith into action in our lives. As we think about these examples, I would encourage us to do just more than read it and not think about it. But as we read it, think about the individuals involved. Think about the circumstances they faced. Think about the challenges they faced and what kind of pressures they were under. Think about what motivated them. And as you think about that, think about the challenges that we face in our life today. Sometimes our challenges will seem pretty insignificant compared to some of theirs. Other times our challenges may be on par with some of theirs. Also, as we think about these examples and things, think about the actions and the events that are not stated in the stories but are implied. Because quite often what you hear is not the entire story, but there's some actions and some background stuff that you know took place. And finally, we need to try to put ourselves in the position of those individuals. Picking up in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the convictions of things not seen. For by it the people of old received their commendation. Right here, I'd kind of like to make the point that what this is telling us is a person's faith is the foundation. It's the support of the hope that we have for eternal salvation. It's the conviction or the proof of the things that we've not seen. And it's by faith that the people of old, the examples that we're fixing to read, receive their commendation from God. You know, we tend to think of commendation as a commendation letter or a commendation award, but really all that letter or that award means is somebody approved of the actions that took place. And I can't think of anything greater than approval from God for the actions that took place. Verse 3, by faith we understand the universe is created by the Word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things that were visible. Pretty short sentence to tell us that, remind us that God in His infinite power and wisdom and knowledge spoke this world into existence. It's not the result of physical visible processes that we see around us today. It was the action of God. Verse 4, by faith Abel offered to God a more acceptable sacrifice than Cain, through which he was commended as righteousness, God commending him by accepting his gifts. And through his faith, though he is dead, he still speaks. Abel's faith led to acceptable, approved actions. And though Abel died, his faith lived on. His example still lives for us. And God's pleasure in his actions continued. Verse 5, by faith Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found because God had taken him. Now before he was taken, he was commended as having pleased God. Verse 6, and without faith it is impossible to please him, for whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. Before we go on, I want to make the point here that as this passage tells us, that if we're going to please God, we're going to have faith. And in addition to having that faith, we've got to believe as part of that faith that He exists. And we also have to believe that He will reward those who seek Him. Remember the passage we read a few moments ago about the demons believe and tremble? The difference there is the diligently seeking to be rewarded by trying to draw near to God. Continuing in verse 7, by faith Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear constructed the ark for the saving of his household. By this he condemned the world, and he became an heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. Did you catch that? The heir or the inheritor of the righteousness that comes by faith. It's faith that determines righteousness, the actions of faith. The other thing is, we're supposed to be thinking about who these individuals and the events they went through. In Noah's case, we have an individual that spent 120 years probably being ridiculed for his neighbor for building this huge boat that nobody's going to need. Example of the faith that on a daily basis was a continual process of reestablishing why he was doing what he was doing. And it was an example of endurance. Verse 9, by faith he went to live in the... Verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called out to go to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. Think about that. You've got Abraham and Haran. And God tells him, load up and leave. I'll show you where to go, but load up and leave. And Abraham did. You know, that kind of reminds me and my brothers and sisters when we were kids. My father was career army, and we were true military brats. When Dad says we're moving, we'd jump in the car and say, where are we going? You know, we had faith that my dad would take care of us, regardless of where we happened to be living. Is that the kind of faith that we have in God? That if He tells us to take action, that we're going to say, okay, let's do it. Verse 9. By faith he went to live in the land of promise as a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. When Abram left Haran, he left family. He left the place he knew. And he went to live as a stranger in strange lands. He was willing to do that because of what he was looking forward to. He was looking forward to that city. Verse 11, by faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. From this passage, what was the driver for Sarah's faith in God? Because she considered him faithful. She considered God trustworthy. If God said something, if God made a promise, her faith said he's going to fulfill it. That's what Sarah's faith was built on, because she deemed God trustworthy. And he is. Therefore, from one man as and him as good as dead, think about this. This is Abraham, who's, I forget exactly, but he's pushing 100, if not over 100. And God says, you're going to have a kid, and your wife is up on up there too. But their faith goes on, so it says, therefore, one man and him as good as dead were born descendants, as many as the stars of heaven and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desired a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. That's at the root of a lot of faith. Is not looking around us and the world around us or behind us and where our homes are from on this earth, but it's looking forward to the heavenly hope. The salvation that we have before us, the source of our faith, coupled with Sarah's faith that God is trustworthy and he'll honor his promises. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom he said, thou Isaac shall your offspring be named. He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. Think about this. We just got through talking about the promise that God had made to Abraham and Sarah about having a child. This would be Abraham's second child, but first child to Sarah, only child to Sarah. This would be the child of promise, where Abraham was promised the descendants. And God says to Abraham, go sacrifice Isaac. There wasn't hesitation about that. Abraham went and did what God told him to do. He prepared Isaac for sacrifice, and he was going to sacrifice Isaac because of his faith in God. Verse 19 tells us specifically that he, referring to Abraham, considered that God was able to even raise him, referring to Isaac, from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. Is that the kind of faith that we have? If we were put in that position with our children, is that the kind of faith that we would have? Verse 20. By faith, Isaac invoked future blessings on Jacob and Esau. By faith, Jacob, when dying, blessed each of his sons of Joseph, bowing in worship over the head of his staff. By faith, Joseph, at the end of his life, made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave directions concerning his bones. Think about this. At the time of Joseph's death, he's in Israel, Egypt. He's been there a while. He's got a lot of descendants there. He's got a number of years ahead before God rescues the children of Israel and extracts them from Egypt. But you've got Joseph saying, hey, this is what I want to happen with my bones. I want you to take them out when you leave. A show of faith there. Verse 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw the child was beautiful and they were not afraid of the king's edict. I don't know of any passages that mention anything in particular regarding Moses' parents as being outstanding other than the faith that they had. Verse 24, by faith Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. You've got Moses, an Israelite, raised as the Pharaoh's grandson, had all these treasures in the physical world, but he obviously knew what his spiritual heritage was. And he ranked the spiritual blessings so much greater than the physical blessings he had as Pharaoh's grandson. Verse 27. By faith he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood, so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch him. I'd like to make a couple of points regarding Moses here. Is these passages are the truth. By faith, Moses did these things. But think back to the Moses at the burning bush. Was he jumping up and down with enthusiasm and eagerness at first to go back into the land of Egypt? No, he took a little convincing, didn't he? You know, how many of us are like that? We at first blush, we were faced with a challenge and we just said, I don't know if I want to do that. But if we screw up our nerves and say, this is what we need to do, and we make up our minds to do it, we can do more than we think we can. And I think Moses is an example of somebody who just, with the proper encouragement and the proper core of faith, screwed up his nerve and did what needed to be done. Verse 28. By faith he kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood, so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch them. By faith the people had crossed the Red Sea on dry land, but the Egyptians when they attempted to do the same were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. This is a good example of, we're told that faith was the reason the Jericho walls fell down. And that's exactly true. But that faith was coupled with the actions of the Jews who marched. By faith, Rahab, the prostitute, did not perish with those who were disobedient, because she had given friendly welcome to the spies. How many of you remember what was motivating Rahab, what her initial point of faith was regarding the people of Israel and God? She had heard how God had been with the people of Israel. She knew that God was trustworthy with His people if His people obeyed. And that knowledge, that faith, and yeah, probably to some degree that fear of not being with the people of Israel, motivated her to help the spies out. Because as you recall, she put a condition on that. She helped because she wanted their assistance. She wanted to avoid the slaughter that she knew was coming with the fall of Jericho. And this was not some well-known religious person or anything like this. This was the English Standard Version says prostitute who had this faith. So who you are, what your religious background is not the determiner. It's what your faith is and what your actions are based on that faith. Verse 32, "And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, and Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, and were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release, so that they might rise again to a better life. Others suffered mocking and flogging, and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, they were killed with the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering about in deserts and mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. And all these, though commended through their faith, did not receive what was promised, since God had provided something better for us, that apart from us they should not be made perfect." Picking up in chapter 12, verse 1. "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who through the joy that was set before us endured the cross, despising shame, and is seated on the right hand of the throne of God." Thinking back on these passages that we've read, we've seen numerous examples of some great things being accomplished by those who have been motivated by faith, with the results that they were commended by God. If we also think back on these people, they were not people that were great in and of themselves. They were just people. Rather, it was their faith in action that resulted in being included, listed among the faithful in Hebrews 11. In fact, if you think back on it a little bit, indeed many of those that are listed had committed significant sins in their lives. David, Bathsheba. Think back at Samson and all the troubles and challenges he had. He had a real weakness for the women. And Jephthah with the rash promises, vows. These were people with the same problems that we all face. They had sins in their life, but due to their faith, they repented and overcame their sins. In short, these are individuals that they're people, just like you and me. And like them, we face choices in how we live our lives. And we also face choices in the actions that we're going to decide to do to demonstrate our faith. Because that's really what James chapter 2 and what we've read through in Hebrews 11, 12 is about. It's about people demonstrating their faith through their actions. It's not about earning our way into heaven. It's about us showing our faith to God, to ourselves, and to the world. And I would encourage us to all think about these examples. And yes, these individuals need to be put up on pedestals as having successfully shown their faith through their actions. But don't put them so high on the pedestal that you think you can't do the same. Because we can do the same. We have God with us. And these individuals had God with us. I made comments about Moses being reluctant to and enthusiastic about going back into Egypt. But he had God with him. And with God's help, the children of Israel left Egypt. Moses is able to do what God asked him to do. And we can too. So I guess what I would say at this point during the lesson, we come to the point that we really need to be thinking in terms of how does this lesson apply to us? Have we not yet obeyed the gospel? Have we not yet shown that faith? Or have we obeyed the gospel, but in our daily lives, taken actions that show our faith is not what it ought to be? Have we done things that shows a weakness in faith? And I said last year, last Wednesday night, that our lives and the actions that we take and the examples we read through point this out too, is quite often it's not a single event, but rather it's a series of events that add up as a cumulative set. We talked about David, and we just mentioned that David's sin with Bathsheba. But yet passages also talk about David being a man after God's own heart. So our lives is more than just a single event. It's accumulation of events in the race that we're running. In high school, I was on the cross-country team, and we ran four-mile races. And I am not a natural runner. I had to work like everything just to be in the middle of the pack. And I had to figure out all the little tricks I could do just to stay in the middle of the pack. And our home course was you started off on a flat as a big sprint. Then you ran downhill. Then you zigzagged up a hill. And you popped up at the top and you looked 400 yards down that way. Then when you got there, you turned and you ran 100 yards. And you turned around again and another 400 yards down that way. And you about then you're going, ugh. And you ended up in a sprint to the finish line. I could not run that race if I thought about at the starting line, I've got 4 miles to run. And thinking about all those terrible things in that course. But I could complete the course if I thought about, well, I've got to sprint till that tree right there. Then all I got to do is make it down to the bottom of the hill right here. Then I make it up to this switchback, to this switchback. That's life. We have to think about the fact that we have a marathon that we're running, but we also need to make it easier on ourselves when we need to in terms of setting this goal right now. My next goal is to set this and make this wise choice in this situation. And if I get that one behind me, I'll get set for the next one. So the invitation I have for you tonight is to think back on these things. And if you've not yet obeyed the gospel, and you do need to obey the gospel, Or if you have and you need the prayers of the brethren, you'll have the opportunity to come forward as we stand and sing. But I'd like to close by rereading Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. God speaking, Paul speaking for God. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated on the right hand of the throne of God. If the invitation applies, I encourage you to come as we stand and sing.
Oh, do not let the word